Thank you for that. And before I get started, I want to do a couple things. First, I want to indicate that Dr. Robert Sanford, who is my graduate advisor, is currently on leave from the University of Denver and is affiliated with the National Science Foundation. And the results that I'll be presenting here today is a final data set that builds off the preliminary data that was presented last year. So some of you who were here last year may remember some of the results and the conclusions derived from our preliminary data, and this is more from the final data set. So there's several reasons why we want to study charcoal. You can see the first three there are fairly, we've seen in other research and discussed here as well. There's a lack of past research in Rocky Mountain forests. And building off the last two talks, I would like to mention that there's also a reason to study charcoal in the sense that we're potentially, this stable pool of carbon may be an overlooked component of the global carbon budget. So therefore, this may fill in some of the gaps in beginning to determine what's going on with the global carbon at the global scale. And then also in response to the use of biochar as applying biochar for site remediation, beginning to get a handle for what the natural baseline levels are. Perhaps we can begin to establish a pattern as how biochar might react when incorporated into these sites for remediation purposes. So I have two main objectives. First is to quantify soil charcoal and total soil carbon in the upper mineral horizons for the dominant land types found in the Colorado Front Range, to begin to get a handle on what those baseline levels are and look at the variability using a combination of GIS, lab, and field-based methods. Secondarily, we'd like to develop a spatially based fire model to develop what I like to call an above-ground charcoal distribution map that will allow us to explore the relationships between forest type and fire regime and the fuel consumption of that biomass and the subsequent charcoal formation. I'd like to start with my first objective with this conceptual overview. This is a stacked graph, time on the x-axis for both graphs. The top graph is a above-ground accumulation of biomass, and the lower y-axis is the actual soil charcoal in megagrams of carbon per hectare. Here we see this arrow is indicating this above-ground accumulation of woody biomass over time, and then there in these fire-prone ecosystems there would be some wildland fire event resulting in some loss of biomass and charcoal formation. And then below ground in the soil, we would see over time that there'd be an actual gain soil charcoal, and then consequently over time that charcoal pool would begin to degrade until there'd be another fire event leading to some gain again in the soil. So you would get this kind of wave effect of charcoal accumulation and charcoal loss. And this red line indicates a long-term mean, if you will, that we're hoping to capture with the research that I've performed. This is just a GIS a KML overlay on Google Earth of my study area. We're basically south and west of Denver proper, primarily in the Mount Evans Wilderness area, outside of the town of Golden. The colors indicate vegetation classes derived from the Colorado Department of Wildlife Gap Vegetation Project. This schematic does not show, I have a mountain shrub type that is not indicated on this map, which would be on the bottom or the eastern edge of the study area. We used ArcMap 9.3 and publicly available geospatial data sources to set up our what we call our sample polygons based on predefined plot criteria. That plot criteria is basically each site type had a central band that was identified, a plus or minus 200 meter central band that was derived from the literature of past research on forest distribution in this region. We further constrained the sample polygons to slopes 5 to 30% northeast to southeast aspects located on public lands. And we also added a road constraint, making sure that any sample plot would be within 2 kilometers of a road, minimal sample size of 0.5 hectares. And then this image on the right is actually in the Mount Goliath Natural Area within Mount Evans Wilderness Area. You can see the darker green areas are potential sample polygons that meet all the criteria. And then the pink squares are randomly located plot locations. Each square is a 25 by 25 meter square with 10 random samples within that. So there was 10 plots per forest type with 10 sample points per plot for a total of 100 total samples for each individual land type, which is a fairly substantial sample size. I also want to indicate that we collected samples for bulk density in a subset of plots that allowed us to expand the data to an aerial basis. In the lab, we used a modification of the Kurth, McKenzie, DeLuca digestion method. Basically, those researchers use Erlenmeyer flasks and hot plates along with nitric acid and hydrogen peroxide over a period of time for the digest period. We modified that to use a Technicon aluminum digest block to allow a more thorough digest and increase the number of samples per run. Both pre- and post-digest samples are further analyzed for percent total C using total elemental analysis. And then the values are reported as megagrams of carbon per hectare, and we also calculate the ratio of charcoal to total soil organic carbon. So this is the first of three result slides. This is primarily focused on the total soil carbon. You can see the 200 meter elevation band here, the forest types here, megagrams of carbon on the x-axis, and you also, in the black box on the tail end here, you see the proportion of charcoal to total soil carbon, at least in a visual sense here. The takeaway from this graph is that the lodgepole pine sites had the lowest levels of total soil carbon, as opposed to the ponderosa pine that had the higher levels of soil organic carbon, with the other three sites falling in the middle there. This is now focused in on those black bars from charcoal from the previous graph. First, I want to indicate, I know I use black here, but this is just the bars represent the total levels of charcoal in the soil, and the black bars are just there to emphasize the actual values themselves. So we also see along this side here the proportion of charcoal to soil organic carbon, and one, plus one standard error bars, the actual values found for total soil charcoal in megagrams of C per hectare. And when I conducted a mixed model for fixed effects with least squares post hoc analysis procedures, I came up with a finding of non-significance. And this PR greater than F value is the equivalent of a P value in the mixed model output. So very similar values. When we begin to look closer at the within the individual forest types, looking at the plot-to-plot variability, what we see is a pattern emerge where the lodgepole pine soils had the most variability plot-to-plot. They also had the lowest levels of soil organic carbon and the highest proportion of charcoal to total C. This may be explained by the fire regime. These lodgepole pine forests are characterized as having infrequent high severity fire regime, a fire regime which may be resulting in the patchiness that we're seeing across the landscape. Contrast that with the ponderosa pine soils. Oh, I'm sorry, the green lines are the mean, the value from the previous slide, just overlaid to give it a context. Contrast the lodgepole pine soils with the ponderosa pine soils, where we see the least amount of variability. We see the lower the lowest amounts of soil charcoal as a proportion of total soil C. And then these forests are characterized as a fire regime that has more frequent surface fires and a low severity fire regime, resulting in the evenness that we're seeing across the landscape. So the observations that we make here is these data indicate that despite the variability in fire regimes and other differences in ecological conditions and variables, we still see similar amounts of soil charcoal present in these forest and mountain shrub soils. And then our large data set of random samples, again, we had 100 samples per forest type, seems to be capturing the long-term average and the range of variability across this landscape. And the method that we use seems to have detected the most recalcitrant carbon, meaning that carbon which is the most resistant to thermochemical degradation. So with the few minutes I have remaining, I'd like to revisit my second objective, the goal of modeling char production using the spatial fire model. This has been attempted in the past. Forbes et al. Is the main article that summarizes past efforts to estimate charcoal produced from biomass consumed using various methods. So our objective is to run the fire model, take that output of biomass consumed and determine how much of that biomass consumed is charcoal, generate a conversion rate, if you will, to produce that above ground char production map. This will allow us to begin to further explore how these above ground dynamics relate to below ground soil charcoal accumulation. The way we anticipate accomplishing this is using industry model that's used throughout fire management circles that combines the National Fires Database, which is the Land Fire Database, along with the various fire models themselves. ArcFuels is a GIS toolbar that acts as an interface between the Landfire database and the models nested within it. We're focused on the FOFM MT, which is the first order fire effects model, which the latest version has a spatial analysis mapping tool, which begins you to allow to look at how these fire models array themselves spatially across the landscape. Tucked within the FOFM MT model is another model called BurnUp, which is a diameter reduction in soil heating model, which was based on Albini and Reinhardt's 1995 article. So after you've set the model up for the different fire regimes and you've run the model, the biomass consumed is either in CO2 emissions or in post-burn biomass. And then our goal is to apply that conversion rate, if you will, to that post-burn biomass pool to begin to get an idea of how much of that biomass consumed is charcoal. This simplified diagram is merely zeroing in on that above ground woody biomass component in the form of carbon megagrams of C per hectare. The majority of it will be lost to CO2 emissions. There'll be a small ash component, and again, a certain amount converted to charcoal. The fate of this charcoal at the ecosystem level, prior to soil incorporation, a portion of it will be lost it'll be volatilized or reburned, physically removed from the site as a function of erosion, or incorporated into the soil. Soil incorporation, there's several factors. You can have cryopetoturbation, biopetoturbation. You can have complexation with existing soil organic matter, or mixing from physical events such as root tip, or the bioactivity of actual collapse of the burrows under the ground. So again, what percent of that biomass is charcoal, and how much of it ends up in the soil? Well, we don't have an exact factor how much ends up in soil, but we can begin to answer some of these questions, hopefully the combination of my empirical research and this modeling exercise. So I'd like to conclude by reintroducing the conceptual overview from the beginning part of the talk. These are now events, individual fire events, if you will, these vertical lines. We can begin to get an idea of how much char is produced per fire event, and if we run it out over a series of iterations as a function of the mean fire interval, we can get an idea of how much charcoal is produced above ground and then how much of it is ultimately incorporated into the soil. And with that, I thank you for your time. And I believe I came in with a minute or so for a couple quick questions. So,
yeah, we have time for some
questions. Oh, good. Thank you. Yes? Could you state that in a form of a, I'm not sure I'm actually.
What about nitrogen fixers? Do you have any that are of significance, and how do they play in the model?
So he's asking the role of nitrogen fixers in charcoal accumulated in the soil.
Just soil carbon.
We didn't do any further exploration into the dynamics about how it's ending up in the soil. We were just sampling what's there and looking at the patterns and trends across the different forest types. Oh, are they present after fire? Unfortunately, I can't answer that directly. Maybe someone else in the audience has an experience with that, but I personally don't know that, an answer to that. Yes?
Because I got a question for you in terms of this method, which we've tried in our lab also. In some of our samples, it seemed like the chemical thermal oxidation, it doesn't really just extract carbon. It seemed to me like we had just sort of humified organic matter that we didn't destroy. So do you have any standard or check so that really what you're getting is truly charcoal?
We've done some exploration. He's asking if there's methodology to begin to determine if the KMD, modified KMD method, is actually detecting carbon or charcoal and not just other forms of humified C. And my answer to that is yes and no. I can't say definitively that we're not getting humified C substances, but yes, we have done work to try and get a handle on those standards. I've got a series of biochar standards, if you will, from Dr. Stupak's, I believe that's how I'm saying his name correctly, from the University of Minnesota, who has developed a series of biochar standards, is made available to me, and I've done some explorations into that. If you look at it from a pure spike level, where if you say, you know, you've got a gram of soil and you spike it with X amount of, you know, milligrams of char, and what's your recovery? We're finding recovery rates under 50%, right between the 35 to 50% recovery range. So in terms of biochar standards, we think we're coming in, we're causing further degradation of that char material. And so it's not 1 milligram of char in equals 1 milligram of char out. So there is further degradation occurring in the digest process. We have not yet done anything, we haven't done any teasing out of the char through any radiocarbon analysis or any infrared spectroscopy or anything along those lines to begin to get at the very species within the soil. But our basic definition is, maybe it's not soil charcoal, but it's like I use that term thermochemical recalcitrance, if you will. So that form of those forms of carbon which are most resistant to the heat and the digest method. So
okay, we're all out of time, so let's give Christopher and all the other presenters.